Hello and welcome to the Simplicity of Happiness When More Is Too Much. This podcast offers tips and techniques for a better life.
And before we begin with another episode about the simplicity of happiness, let me remind you that you can find out all about me and my work if you head over to simplicityofhappiness.com. And now I would say, sit back and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to another pre-recorded episode of the Simplicity of Happiness podcast. Just in case that I am referring to something which is not currently the case in 2023, that's because this podcast was recorded more than a year ago with a super inspiring person, Rob White. I had a wonderful conversation, and this is why I did not want to bear out on this. So let us start with the original recording. There are a couple of more coming in the following weeks before I am up to date with current recordings again. Thank you. And now enjoy the show. Today from the snowy Swiss mountains, I guess, to snowy Boston, at least the East Coast. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Florian. Absolutely. From what your snow to our snow. Exactly.
Yes. So it's one of the few times that we have kind of the same weather in North America and Europe. So often I talk to somebody and then it's like here it's a rainy summer and there it's a hot summer or the other way around. So now we are in it together.
Perfect.
Rob, I had to think about a story of my own life. Because back then, I had, when I was younger, even when I was about 15, 16, I spent a year in the United States in Salt Lake, near Salt Lake City in Utah. I did an exchange year. And there was somebody from promoting a college year abroad. And they were presenting the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. And I thought, from that time on, I thought, well, once I'm done with school, I'm gonna be abroad again. I'm gonna travel the world, and I will be everywhere. I will be doing work and travel right after work. And then expectations hit me. I thought, well, I have to do the civil service for 1 year. I wanted to go to Africa, but this was a little bit of a gray zone in Germany, where you could go either to military for a year or you do civil service in Germany. If you want to do it abroad, you could register this and normally it would be fine. And then I examined the possibilities. And then I thought, well, I'm not brave enough. Something inside of my brain told me, oh, no, Flo, this is not right for you. You're not brave enough. Or for living abroad, going to Australia. Maybe you hear my dog, which is funny enough. An Australian dog. It's an Australian Kelpie. So I ended up doing civil service in a national park, which was very interesting in Germany, but I didn't go to Australia till today. I managed to have a build up a life in Africa much later. But back then, I thought, no, this is not for you. This is not what it's expected of you. You have to get a job. You have to have the money first. You need to go to university. You need to have that diploma. And once you've proven it to everybody else, well, maybe then is the time that you can do what you think is fun. What is your opinion on that? How is that we have like a heart pulling us in one direction and something else pulling us in the opposite direction or holding us back?
Well, Florian, I think, of course, you touched right on what I'm about, and that is there's two of us. there's the I am that I was born with. That's my heart pulling me in that direction that I love to go. And I'm in flow, quite frankly. And I'm spontaneous and joyful and innovative and creative. But at age two, and I call it the terrible twos of the child, that's when the 60,000 no's come rolling in. And by age five, there's two things that I have come to a conclusion. One is there's something wrong with me. There's got to be. How could there be 60,000 no's? And I don't know everyone else is hearing them. I think just I am. And two, I got to look good to fit in and be part of the family. So you're interesting when you had it, you thought to yourself, well, I got to put in a year and fit in and look good. And maybe then I can do what I want to do. So that's the other self we give birth to at age two. And I call it the unwanted mental house guest that convinces us. Yeah, it shows up and convinces us to do what everyone else wants us to do rather than what our heart is yearning. So that's, and what I've found, Florian, is that you never get rid of that other self. Once you give birth to it.
Why not? Rob, why not? Once I discovered, I don't like it.
And I agree with you. And the reason is it's where we feel secure. It has convinced us, and I call it because it doesn't exist. It's a myth that we put together during childhood moments of fear and pain. It convinces us that we have to look good and be right and be dutiful and all the stuff that will have us feel secure. Because you see, Florian, the first time when you were a little boy and you heard a harsh no, you felt a break from belonging, it was devastating. Me too, everyone. I mean, we really naturally feel like we're part of the tribe. But when we hear no, that's a bad boy. It isn't the no that's a bad boy that scares us as much as we now feel disconnected. And the whole rest of our life, that feeling of disconnection absolutely scares us. And that's where you had a wrestling match. Do I stay in Germany, work at the park? Do I go to Africa and do my thing there? That little three-year-old was so fearful in you that it said, stay in Germany, pay your dues, and then you can go do what you want to do.
And then there was the next thing around the corner. So it never stopped.
And it won't. See, that's the part that I really do get, Florian. In some self-help circles, they'd like to think you get rid of that other self. You never get rid of it. I think part of the gig of being a human being is being the maestro, that part of you that can conduct your daily affairs and orchestrate your life in a way that you would love your life. But then there's the other self. And I call that the intruder, the great imposter. That self is so good at pretending it's you that it not only convinced the world it's you, it convinced you it's you. And we get so secure in being that, that's called living lives of quiet desperation. We don't dare let it go. We think that we will be totally annihilated or whatever it is that we don't dare let it go. And yet, what I love you just said, here you are, older, wiser, world traveled, very intelligent, yet that other self is right there, ever, always present, ready to put you in your place. See, the other thing with the other self is by age five, I heard 60,000, as everyone does. I came to a conclusion there's something wrong with me. And that other self never stops reminding me of that. When I stub my toe, oh, you jerk, look where you're going. When I make a stupid business decision, what's wrong with you? Why would you even go in the pot? So it seems to me that we are so outrageously talented that the way we hold ourselves back and signed on to as human beings is to invent, create, give birth to an other self that keeps us down low. And as you're noticing, the likes of William Blake caught that, the likes of great poets and great philosophers get a glimpse of the fact, my power is an understanding. There is two of me. If I think there's only one of me, I'm stuck with the me I wish I wasn't. Mm-hmm. If I'm willing to know, I'm never going to get rid of it. Who said, human beings are the only critter who makes their own traps and steps in them all their life? Steinbeck, someone, well, those 60, those 60,000 knows that when we create the worst trap of, we create an other self who's trying to cope in life and be light and feel like we're part of and get positive assessment. And we sacrifice our joyous, spontaneous self in the name of that self. That's the trap.
Do you think we should treat our children different then?
I don't think we can. I think part of the trap is we can't. I mean, out of well-being, you've got to say no. And sometimes when the kid's driving you crazy, you got to say, that's enough. I've had it. Yeah, that's just natural. I think part of the gig of being a human being, and I don't care where you were born, is you hear the 60,000 no's. Now, I'll tell you one thing, though, Florian, when I was in with a Maasai tribe for 6 weeks in Tanzania with an interpreter, I gave myself that gift at age 50, incredible. Three things I found out about them that makes them incredible beings, I think more evolved than we are, even though technologically we may be advanced. They don't know how to lie. They don't know how to lie. They get that their well-being and their safety depends on telling the truth always. They just don't even have a hint that lying is an option. Second, they don't take the other self that seriously. When they get scolded for doing something dumb, they see it as a way I was being that doesn't work. They don't think it is them. They don't ever say, oh, I'm so stupid. They will say that was a stupid way for me to be. But when you say it that way, you're off the hook and you can learn from it. Mm-hmm. And the third thing I got with them is they don't see themselves as separate eyes. They don't see I'm here, you're there. They really do see the we-ness of the tribe. They see themselves as one big, wonderful, like a hill of ants, an ant hill. They're all just scrambling around, getting wonderful things done in the world of ant. And not ants don't think of themselves as individual ants. That's not a demeaning statement. I'm saying that's an enlightening statement. So from them, I got that they're very aware of the other self. And it grips them. It does grip them when they're caught off guard. But they don't let it continue to make their decisions for them. They separate themselves from it. We don't know how to do that.
So what do you think is a solution for somebody struggling as the younger version of myself? Because you said it's never going away, and that sounds a bit hopeless in that mindset that we have nowadays, that for every problem there has to be a solution, and everything if there's a problem, it doesn't matter whether it's a physical problem, we just cut it away, and now you tell me it's there, and well, your problem, it's gonna stick.
The answer to that is acknowledge that it's there. Here's what I do. When it shows up, and it shows up with still now a lot in little ways. It doesn't always show up in big traumatic ways. In little ways, for example, the other day I turned quickly and my hand hit the chair and I really hurt my thumb. And I started cursing the chair, cursing my wife for putting the chair there. Blame anybody except yourself. I didn't really curse it, but I'm talking about in my head.
Yeah.
Blame somebody. Here's what I do. I go, oh, you're good, to the other self, the intruder. You're good. Boy, you can sneak in and take over my mind and my life in an instant. By acknowledging that I get that the other self, the intruder, just took over my life, I'm now free to choose to be who I choose to be. Wow. Now, I may want to pay attention when I'm So what I got was, and it's part of a Zen culture, a philosophy, if you try to get out of the trap, you put yourself deeper in the trap. You got to learn to live free in the trap. Learn to love who you are and be who you are in spite of the fact there's another I am in there who's going to be chattering, trying to stop you. Mm. So, what I love what you said. One of the problems today in the world is we want quick answers and solutions. And COVID has come along to prove to us that ain't happening, buddy boy. And I love COVID for that reason. I hate COVID. I love COVID for that reason. It's telling us, slow down. First of all, you're not in charge of everything. Clearly, I am nature. I'll tell you
what. What are you in charge of?
Well, and the only thing you're in charge of is your choices of how you experience COVID. That's the only thing I have full charge over, is my experience of COVID. Will it be fear, anger, resentment at those who don't wear masks, whatever? Or will it be one of interest, fascination? How am I going to deal with it? Will I get my vaccine? Will I wear a mask? Will I know I'm not going to get it? For example, for me, Florian, COVID 18 months ago, and I'm 78, going on 58, I'm 78. So they'd claim me one of the vulnerable ones. First of all, here's my decision I made about me and COVID. I ain't going to get it. And if I do get it, I'm not going to know. And I can tell you one thing for sure, I'm not going to die from it. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I've been living that. If I had it, I don't even know I had it. And I can tell you, if I did get it, I'm not going to die. That was my choice. All the other stuff and everybody else's. So my only choice in the world is my experience of the world. And I give that up if I let the other self tell me what to do, who tells me I'm flawed. Because then you know what I'm going to say to myself? I'm 78. I'm one of those who's going to die. Oh my God, what am I going to do?
When did you discover that? When did you discover that there's another self? And when did you discover that freedom of acceptance as being a way out of the trap or deeper in the trap?
I discovered it with another self at age 15 when I was a wise guy in a small mill town. And I was a wise guy. I was a punk. I'd cheat, steal, lie, do whatever I had to do to get through life, because I thought that's how you got through life. And the principal brought me in and said to me, I was once a white snide to him, and I made a snide remark in public, and he brought me in his office. He said, well, now, you know, I'm going to tell you something, Bobby. That's what they called me back then. You're a winner, but I think you're going to win at losing. You got it down. I never even heard that statement, winning at losing. He says, you've got all the act down for being a good winner at losing at life. And you know what you're going to do? You're going to work in the local factory. You're going to become an alcoholic, get married two or three times and have seven kids and hate your life. That's where you're going. Or you could be a winner at winning. I didn't know there was that choice. And that's when I started to get the news toward me here. And the one that I've been paying attention to is the one that's trying to get around everyone. And that was my first sense of when I really got it was I taught school for 17 years and I loved teaching and I hated teaching and I drank a lot. One Saturday after drinking way too much Friday night at age about, after 17 years of teaching, I got that I wasn't who I want to be. Who am I? And I got, who is this I am that I'm insisting I am that I don't even like? And yet I think I got to be it. That's when I quit teaching. Not because I hated teaching. I hated the me I was, who was, by the way, you know who that me was? The one who didn't dare take chances like that.
Yeah, I would like to repeat that. Because there was something in it that was just a sentence. But if you let that sink down, being a listener of this show, you said, who is that I am that I am, who I don't even like? And I experience so many people that don't like their everyday life. They don't like who they are in their relationship. Often they are complaining about their partner. But as soon as we dig deeper and I ask them about their responses, they respond in a way that they don't want to be. They are a boss they don't want to be. They are an employee. I'm just coming out of a coaching session where, well, it's a problematic boss she has. That's a fact. That she's focusing so much on the boss that she is treating him a way that she does not want to be.
That's beautiful.
And, well, if you're listening to this, just think about all these moments where you behave in a way, well, this is the big turnaround. Not that you are somebody you don't want to be, but that you behave in a way that you don't want to be. Then you can have that shift and say, well, how would I like to have behave? And then just change your behavior. Because if you have that drive, that means that your true heart is somebody else than the one that behaves.
You know, that's beautiful. How you summarize that. I had a friend who told me he had a bossy wife. and what I got was the I am that he was around his wife is, I am mm-hmm. your bossy. So in other words, he didn't even think I'm going to think you're bossy. He just was, I am that you're bossy.
Mm-hmm.
When I pointed out, what would it be like if you, what does she do and say? And if you let her do and say what she does and says the way she says it, but you are that she means well, and that's just the way she says it. His experience of her as being bossy is no longer there, but that's because his experience of himself as being judgmental. See, what I helped him to see is, how about she just speaks the way she speaks and does what she does, and you come from being judgmental? What if it just came from, I love my wife, she means the best for me, and this is the way she handles things? It's the same. The wife doesn't change.
Yeah.
He changes, and the whole experience for him changes.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing that I mention down the road when I'm coaching somebody for a longer time, because at the beginning it's sometimes a bit it's a bit too theoretical, but well, if you're listening now, you may have heard me before. It's this connection with now. Every time that we are thinking, it's already processed. We are not experiencing the world with our brain, at least not with our conscious brain. It means that we had senses. We had, we smelled something, we tasted something, we saw something, we heard something, and then it's processed. Electromagnetic things travel through our body. Somewhere it's filtered down because our brain is only capable of so many things. And then we store it in a way that once we think of it, we create an image of the world. So as soon as we are thinking, we are not experiencing the world, but the world that we processed and somehow saved in our brain. And when you focus on your senses, focus on what do you see right now? A tree. Do you see leaves? Do you see what color do they have? What shape do they have? What do you hear? What do you smell? What do you taste? What do you feel? How do you feel inside? That's the only possibility of being in connection with the real world. And it's always happening now. And when you focus on that, you can get rid of the emotions. Because emotions are already a reaction to what you are feeling. So if you concentrate not on your emotions, but on your sense, you are in connection with the world. And when you think what you feel, and then you say what you think, and you act upon what you say, you create an interaction with the real world out there, which creates senses that are connected to what you did, what you said, what you thought, what you felt before. And that's the only way that you can have this, I call it a reality loop. It brings you to the moment right now. And it's taking out a lot of these, what would happen if. It's just bringing you back to the moment and getting this connectivity to the moment right now.
You know, that took you a lot of thinking to get to that point.
Probably.
And you know, that's you saying in my way, when you experience your experience, see, if I say to you, tell me what you're experiencing right now, you can't. Because the minute you start telling me, you're conceptualizing what you experience.
Yeah.
So when you're experiencing, when I experience my experience, and I love going for walks with my parrot friend Shakespeare, I have a parrot of 38 years, and I go for walks with him. And we go out in nature, and we just love nature. And we don't talk about it. We just, he's on my shoulder, and I'm walking, and I'm just in the moment. And I'm in bliss, and nothing's bothering me. And then when I start thinking about it, I conceptualize it. That's not the experience. And yet now I live from my concept. And if I'm living from my concept, I'm not feeling fully alive. There's a mechanicalness going on. So what you're saying is that's the bottom line to really being the authentic self, is to be willing to be with what's going on, accepting it as it is without judging it. The minute you start judging it, you're not experiencing it. You're experiencing your judgment of it. Well, that's a tricky one. And you've gone a long ways by getting to that, you know, that point. And that's some place where I've been with some pretty heavy hitters when it comes to thinkers and who have gotten there. And here's what's amazing. When someone's there, they're in bliss and they're sitting there with you and you're completely aware that they're completely with you. But they don't want to talk about it because they can't be with you. The minute you talk about it, you're not it. You're not in it. You're talking about, you remove yourself from the moment. Oh, that's good stuff. Heavy, but great stuff. Because that's when you can lighten up too. Because you're right. All of your soap operas come out of your story of your experience. Your experience is never a soap opera. It's what happened, period. And what happened, period. And there's no white, wrong, good, or bad. There's the isness, and it's incredible. That's the feeling of aliveness you love when you travel. I love when I walk with Shakespeare. I have the advantage of pretty much doing anything I want to do because I've made a lot of money and stuff. I could go to the Super Bowl and sit on the 50-yard line. I would rather walk in, out there, not now, it's winter, out there in the park with Shakespeare on my shoulder. That's the greatest feeling of freedom and bliss and aliveness.
Yeah.
Like that.
That's another very interesting aspect. The moment that you are fully experiencing, you are not rethinking it because your full attention is just on the attention.
Yeah.
And doesn't happen often, but I lost my point.
No, you can. It doesn't happen often either.
I think it will come back in a moment. Because what I was just about, I had an inside moment, and that inside moment just like it blew up and it disappeared again.
Quick example, Florian. This is so everybody knows when they experience the experience.
Uh-huh.
One reason men and women love to make love and have a mutual orgasm is in that moment. There's just orgasm.
Yeah,
it nothing is else. Not thinking what you should do to help her have hers. Her thing, what she. It's just two people united in the name of orgasm, not thinking, experiencing it. Period.
Yeah.
So we all have had that.
It's not an emotion. No. It's a feeling. Yeah, that feeling brings you in that very moment. Oh, yes, and here we go. And that's a moment where you don't want. Because you cannot experience the moment and think about what is missing. So that moment that you are completely enjoying Shakespeare or your partner or the sunset, that's a moment where now is enough. And that is a moment when somebody is rich, successful. The moment that you want, that you don't want anything that you don't already have, that is the moment that you're truly wealthy. And the moment that you just, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank account, when you sit there and you truly enjoy that moment, it's a moment of not wanting anything else. And that's why, well, we talked about this before. I think happiness is simple. So happiness lies in the simplicity. It's not well, getting things more complicated. It's not about blowing up a moment. It's not about overthinking. It's just experiencing a simple moment. And that's where people feel bliss. That's why I believe it lies in the simplicity. And yet, simplicity is so hard to find nowadays.
You know, I love your opposites. You know what happens when you're very in the, you're experiencing the experience, which is in the moment? You feel whole and complete. There's nothing about you that you want to change. And out there in the world to you is perfect. There's not, you don't want more of something. You don't want different of what's happening. There's a wholeness, a completion, an absolute satisfaction. What a gift. And you, I'm glad you caught that. This is a heavy conversation and it's a light conversation. But if your folks can get a glimpse of that, and what I love you said, because I can tell you, I'm a wealthy man and I have all the toys. There's no happiness in that. What you own owns you, by the way. So don't think that's when I'm with Shakespeare out in the park, my God, I feel absolutely perfect just the way I am. And everything going on in that moment is absolutely perfect just the way it is. And that's available all the time. I happen to have figured out how to do it with a parrot on my shoulder walking in the park. You know, some people can do it riding on the subway, going in town, whatever.
Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the fear of losing that?
Well, I lose it all. So I find I lose it more than I get it. The minute I fear losing it, I lose it. So I have to learn. Yeah, that's probably the biggest problem is thinking, I hope I don't lose it. Because the minute I think that, I've lost it. So can I just let go of being of worrying about losing it? I think that's where you find these fully realized masters who drink a sip of goat's milk and some, exist on it for 3 days. There was somebody who got buried over in India. It was documented for 3 days, 6 feet under. And when they dug him up, he was perfectly fine. He was able to bring himself to a full experience of being 6 feet under with very limited oxygen or just the oxygen in his body, just being with and not worrying or thinking about any consequences. They dug him up and he got up and walked away like nothing had happened. See, that, those are the miracles that you can never explain if you're willing to just be with yourself in the moment and experience that. Yeah.
I might have mentioned that before on the podcast because it's a story of a friend of mine. He used to live twice for a whole entire year in a Zen monastery in Japan because he was a bit of a karate kid. So they wanted to have him over in Japan and he lived in that monastery. And at one time, as a departure gift, the head monk, I don't know how you call that in English, he gave him a very, very old traditional tea cup, tea bowl, a Japanese one, handmade hundreds of years ago. And it was in that monastery for ages. And he said, I can't accept it. At some point, I'm going to break it. This is so valuable. I cannot accept it. And the head monk told him, yes, that's going to happen. That's why you need to learn to say goodbye to things the moment you let them in your life. And I struggled with that so much because if I apply this to people, it means I'm saying goodbye to people, so I don't want to keep them, so I'm not comforting them. And once it sank into my thoughts for long enough, for years probably, I realized the moment I know I'm going to lose, the dog, the thing, the person, my life, everything, the more I can enjoy the moment because that's all we have.
That's beautiful. You know, at 78, I'll tell you what I've learned, Florian, more than ever before, I'm going to die. Now, no, I don't intend to die for another 20 years, but I'm going to die. And I'm going to tell you, knowing I'm going to die allows me to live. When I'm 30 and 40, I don't think I'm going to die. I waste time. I don't have time to waste anymore. I'm going to die. Not that's not bleak. That's like the cup. Yeah, you're going to drop the cup and break the cup maybe or lose the cup.
Yes.
But the point is, now that I know at 78, I do know I'm going to die. I pay a lot of attention to feeling alive, not just being in life. I mean, feeling alive in life. That's a very different than mechanically being and reacting to life.
Yeah, that was the biggest change. I had that realization when I was 35, and all of a sudden I realized, no, what you want to do, you have to do now. Don't plan for, it's all going to be away. And I realized every minute it's ticking down the list, and it did not frustrate me. It motivated me to make the best out of every moment. And I still struggle, and sometimes I fail and I get frustrated, and then I'm wasting time, but I'm getting back to it more and more and more often. And it's one of my main drivers it's the main driver for recording this episode, for creating something that people can learn from, because then, it gives meaning to everything that we do if somebody else can participate from it. Well, what is your suggestion for our younger selves? If they are listening and they say, well, I can feel that, but my life is so difficult, I can't change. What is your suggestion?
I love what you said, Florian. Pay attention to what you're paying attention to. And what, when you were an infant, I loved life. Let me talk about me, because I'm you. Learning to walk and talk and read and write. I mean, God, those were just wonderful challenges, and I delighted in them. When did I start to think of challenges as problems? See, and I would say to anyone, you've got to get, you know what turns a challenge into a problem? When you say, this shouldn't be. Well, it should be. If it happened, it is. So there it is. So stop saying it shouldn't be. It's there. It should be. And deal with it like a possibility. Like, what? Seriously, what if life is nothing but an entourage of possibilities coming at me? So what is this challenge? And instead of seeing it as a problem, just say, what might be the possibility? There's your aliveness. There's your creative self. There's the authentic you, the maestro, as in my book, The Maestro Monologue, versus the other self, who's always wanting to condemn and blame and judge and be right and look good, or all that other stuff that they taught us. By the way, they were taught by their parents, or taught by their parents, so don't blame your parents. They're just being who their parents insisted. See, you don't want to be who your parents insist you want to be, because they insist they want you to be them, but better. How about you came here to be you? Parents don't mean it by anything mean by that, but what they want you to do is be them, but better. Mm. They don't get that your children are not your children, and they are sons and daughters of life here longing to express themselves, Kahil Gibran. Yeah. So if you can get back to that, and that's what this, I learned a lot. You know what? This is like, I wasn't in the interview with you. I was listening. First of all, listening to you, clearly you learned a lot from life experiences, which shows up.
I learned a lot from suffering.
Yeah, and I didn't want to say the word suffering. Clearly you've had your share and you've learned a lot. You're sharing now. The suffering actually isn't all bad. There's some really good stuff comes out of suffering.
The best stuff in my life came from.
I mean, as I complete with this wonderful conversation again, because I like Kahil Gibran, as a philosopher, and he said, the more scars you have, the wiser you are. See, you don't get to wisdom by avoiding the risk that life is. You got to jump in. Life is risky business. Jump in and take the risk, and you're going to have a ball like that.
The price of life will be death.
Oh, God, that's beautiful. This is wonderful. You're a lot of fun. We should do another one, and I'm not locking you in. We got to do a part two. Yeah.
Yes, of course. But before I let you go, imagine I'm going to ask you a question I never asked anybody else before. If you had a wish from me, what would it be?
I'm not sure what that question means. If I had a wish from you.
Yeah, I'm lacking a bit of English there. So, well, normally you can only wish for yourself. Like, hey, I wish that I will do this and this in the next year or in the next 20 years. But if you could, if you had a wish for me, from me, so what would you expect me to do in my life? If you could.
For me, what I hope and wish that mm-hmm. you stay on this journey you're on for my sake, because you have so much to offer. See, I'm selfish. I want you to do what you're doing for my sake. if you continue, now there are a lot of people I wish they'd stop doing what they're doing for my sake. See, but, and what one other thing I've really learned is this, Florian. We do everything for our own sake. But if you're really doing it for self-satisfaction, you're in service to the world, because that's how the world is set up, to serve. It's amazing, but gimme, gimme, gimme. You're not doing anything for your sake either. You're just, when you're really feeling fully satisfied in life, you're just out there expressing and giving in a way that's productive and loving. That's natural. And so I really hope you stay on the path you're on and do what you're doing and share it with the world for my sake, because I'll run across you again and we're going to have I'm going to listen to you, take it up one little level higher. So that's it for me.
Isn't it funny that all the bad things lessen when you share them, and all the good things, they double when you share them? Well, having said this, Rob, if somebody wants to find out about you, I'm going to link everything in the show notes. But if somebody's driving now and not looking at the show notes, where can they find you?
Well, robwhitemedia.com is my website. My book, my latest book, which I think is a treasure, is The Maestro Monologue, found in Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I'm on Twitter at Rob White Media. Thank you.
So Rob White Media is the Google search term that you need to keep in mind, my dear listener. Rob, thank you for that time. I enjoyed every bit of it. And I'm really looking forward to talk to you again.
Thank you. Blessings.